The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting. The A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Raw. Back in Toronto, John Pollock and Wei Ting here with you on Monday night, coming out of tonight's show in Baltimore. How are you, Wei?
Doing all right, John. Yeah, happy to be back. Lots to talk about.
There's lots to talk about. It was a very busy weekend. There was a lot going on. How, 24 hours removed, how was your trip to Cleveland?
I quite enjoyed it. Yeah, we kind of, you know, spoke... I would say a good amount about it on Saturday at this point, but I think Cleveland was a city I kind of underestimated, and I actually had a much better time than I was expecting.
I had a great time. It was a fun time to go down there. Lots of stuff to do in Cleveland. I am glad to be back home. It was quite the catch up day for me today.
Getting out of routine tends to do that. So.
Well, tonight we are going to go through some of the news over the last couple of days, and then we will be getting in tonight's edition of Raw. But want to make note of the continued G1 coverage that we continue to put out on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We're at the midway point of the G1, and coming up later this week, we're going to have several G1 shows coming at you, because after this past weekend shows, WH Park and Eric Marcotte did a great roundup of the 10 tournament matches, not only giving you their recommended matches, also getting our first not recommended match of the tournament.
A review only capable by Mr. Park, yes.
Oh, WH Park in fine form with Eric Marcotte. I enjoyed these two together. They were quite the combo. But later this week, so G1 is running Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So on Wednesday, we're going to have those two shows recapped by Kate from Montreal. And making his G1 debut, Wei Ting is jumping into the deep end of the G1. Are you ready?
Not at all. I'm not ready. So
I think that's the way you should approach it, Wei.
Kind of, yeah. I'm somebody who's been pretty much like disconnected from it at this point. Like the G1 feels more of a burden than something that like I'm watching to enjoy. So that's kind of the mindset I'm going into, you know. We're already halfway through the tournament. I'm going to be diving right in and trying to catch up on it. Kate is somebody who is very much the opposite. She's been following very closely, so I'll be relying on her a lot. And you know what? Maybe for people that are in a similar position as me, this might be a good time to catch up as well.
Well, that's going to come out Wednesday on the Cafe. Thursday, another G1 show, this one hosted by Bruce Lord and Eric Marcotte, as they are going to be going through Thursday's card. So this is... I would say this is the stretch that even if you've been an ardent follower of the G1, it's going to be testing you this week. After back-to-back shows this weekend and then three nights in a row, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I remarkably caught up on the G1 on Sunday night. Had to digest 10 matches, Wei. But I did it. So on the Saturday show... Zack Sabre Jr. and Shingo Takagi, easily the match of the show in that A block one. The A block has not been as strong as the B block throughout this tournament, but you do have Zack and Shingo in the A block. These two did not disappoint. I would say one of the upper echelon matches of the tournament. Just terrific chemistry that these two had, and a great finale stretch that they managed to have. So coming out of that one, Takagi is now up to 6 points, while Zach, that was his second loss of the tournament, and he still has 8 points. He's in second in the A block. The match I really want to highlight is from Sunday's show, which was Overall, it was a fairly good show, but the match of the show, no question, was Hirooki Goto and Kinosuke Takeshita. No surprise with Takeshita, but I will state that now Goto has elevated. I think he has leapfrogged Yuya Uemura when it comes to the second best performer of this tournament, and I think you have the sentimental favorite in Goto that Takeshita does not have that same dynamic. Goto is the oldest competitor in the tournament. He is now playing that Yuji Nagata role that he was, like the elder statesman of the pack. And in this match, I mean, just the drama of this match, and they had an incredible crowd in Nagoya. And I mean, to me, it was Goto and one of his finest performances, 15 minutes. And it was not just, he was busting out like the Kaiten, which is his code red. He's bringing back everything, the Shotenkai, his stalwarts, you know, the GTW, but everything is this struggle for him to get it. Like, it's this monumental achievement when he does it. And when he hit this Shotenkai counter right before the finish, it was this near fall, and this place erupted thinking it was the end. And then they had this big, big struggle for the final GTR of the match, match of the tournament. This was the best match I've seen in the G1 this year. Takeshita is, I think, pretty solidly the performer of the tournament, but man, am I into Goto in this year's G1. I mean, I've always enjoyed his appearances in the G1. He's never that guy that's gotten his flowers. He's always like one of the afterthoughts that everyone just kind of takes for granted. And this year, with the elimination of so many prior names, he's kind of like this link to the past. And goddamn, could this guy just elicit such a dramatic response from this audience. And he's been doing it throughout this tournament, and this was at another level. So this highest of recommendations for this Goto Takeshita match that I think is the front runner for match of the tournament at the midway point.
What's your rating for it?
Oh man, this dude, like a friggin' Dunkin' Donuts extra large. Okay. You know how the portion sizes are so big in the US? This was a Dunkin' Donuts XL coffee. Okay. With oat milk. Okay. That's how strong this was.
Yes.
Great match. Yeah, the tournament so far. So we're at the midway point, and I thought this would be fun. I went back. If you're doing your homework and you want to do some catch up, these are the match recommendations that our crack staff has recommended throughout the tournament. That comes with all of our match descriptions. So some matches worth highlighting from the first night on July 20th: Yota Tsuji against Kinosuke Takeshita, Yuya Uemura against David Finley, Hirooki Goto against Jeff Cobb, a lot of Goto appearing on this list. The second night, July 21st, Yota Tsuji versus David Finley, Zack Sabre Jr. against Tetsuya Naito, Hirooki Goto against Yuya Uemura. Night 3, July the 23rd, we have Zack Sabre Jr. against Callum Newman, Jeff Cobb against Kinosuke Takeshita. I don't expect you to watch all of these by Wednesday way, but these are recommendations for people out there. Night 4, July 25th, Kinosuke Takeshita against Yuya Uemura, Hanare against Finley. Then we go to night 5, July 27th, one recommendation, Zack Sabre Jr. and Jake Lee. Maybe Jake Lee's only decent performance of the tournament so far. Jake Lee has been a big disappointment. Yuya Uemura against Jeff Cobb from July 28th, which was the sixth night. That same night, Goto against Tsuji, Hanare against Takeshita. Then on July 29th, you had Umino against Zack Sabre Jr., Gabe Kidd against Shingo Takagi. July 31st, night number 8, Uemura against Hanare. And then this past weekend's recommendations, Zack Sabre Jr. and Takagi from August 3rd, and Sunday, Finley against Bolton and Goto against Takeshita. So those are some of the recommendations from our team at Post Wrestling that have been doing all of the G1 shows, which continue on later this week. We've got two shows in Korakuen Hall, with Tuesday's show headlined by Sonata and Shingo Takagi, and Wednesday's show, Goto is in the main event with David Finley. So he's being put in the big spot on Wednesday's show. So I would say, like, it's been a good tournament so far. You're certainly getting some great performances. Until that Takeshita Goto match, I wouldn't say anything has like cracked that, like, you had like that match of the year type feeling. And I'm not necessarily saying Goto and Takeshita would be match of the year, but it had that feeling of one of the big, big dramatic G1 matches. But there's been some very good matches throughout, but there's also been some disappointments. I would say the low points have been Jake Lee. I think Tetsuya Naito has just struggled throughout this, and that there's a big spotlight on Naito and him getting through the second half of this tournament. It's been a lot to watch, to the point it does make you wonder, Wei, if we see Naito in next year's G1. I mean, it's typical, like they run until the wheels fall off, but the wheels are falling off of Naito during this tournament and nine big matches, and he's got several more to go, plus the playoffs.
Well, it depends if they need him next year to sell all these shows.
Yeah, we will see what goes on there. Just coming out of the weekend, Wei, what would you say were the big news items from this weekend that come to mind for you, especially as it relates to SummerSlam weekend? What did you think were...
Are you talking about real news or storyline plot points?
Either. What do you think were like the big things going on?
I guess a lot of it was storyline based. You know, it's the return of Roman Reigns, the I guess implosion of the Judgment Day. The culmination of a lot of like long-term stories that they built, Gunther winning the championship, I suppose. Real world stories.
Logan Paul.
Yes. The Logan Paul controversy. Yep. I would say so. What else?
You know, I just want to say on the Logan Paul thing, like just kind of absorbing like just how much coverage that story has gotten. Like it kind of started from, like, I'm fairly certain Logan Paul was the first one to tweet about this with the Algerian boxer. But it is just like you have this has become just a political lightning rod now with like where it has gone. And there's been criticism of Logan Paul's statement after the fact where kind of walked it back. He acknowledged he spread misinformation, but so did everyone else online. There was no apology within that statement. And it's just interesting to look at the fact that, first of all, Paul Levesque was not asked about it at the press conference, but it's not just a performer that is tweeting about this when you figure the fact that this is also one of the major sponsors of UFC and WWE in terms of his company in Prime Energy that you're also attaching this to. And I could not imagine a Paul Levesque responding to defend Logan Paul in such a Wei. I don't think he'd throw him under the bus, but I don't think he would be having the response that, for instance, Dana White would have. I think that you would certainly see this. Like it's hard, like something like this is kind of right in the kind of lane Wei that you heard a lot of the stuff that would come out of Sean Strickland's mouth, for instance. And I know firsthand how Dana White would defend that. But it's a story that, as much as this has just been this gigantic story, it does not feel like WWE was kind of lumped into this, or TKO by extension, even though like Logan Paul is very tied in, obviously, to WWE and TKO as both his company as a major sponsor of theirs, but also as a front facing figure on television.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think part of that is because Logan Paul is such a big entity and a brand unto itself that WWE for him just feels more of a side hustle. And in that regard, I guess I don't know how much people would even draw that association, expecting maybe WWE to take any sort of responsibility for it. Certainly, the people, you know, nobody in the press conference felt that Wei, I guess, or at least people who had a chance to ask a question. I think, you know, if he were to be asked, Triple H would have probably kept it pretty apolitical, at least, or at least probably showed no hands about maybe how he might feel about the situation. So, you know, that's probably that.
Yeah, in terms of the, I guess, biggest storyline wise, I mean, watching Raw tonight, it was very, like, they were pushing the hell out of Roman Reigns' return, appearing on SmackDown. Like, if you missed SummerSlam and just watched tonight's Raw, that was obvious. Like, that was the big story coming out of it. Like, they aired so many promos for Roman. They were highlighting the 100 million social views his return attracted. Like, that felt like the number one story, above Gunther winning the title, above CM Punk and Drew, above anything on the Raw side. Even, you know, the Judgment Day breakup was heavily focused on tonight, but I thought they did a very good job of just driving people to SmackDown and Roman Reigns feeling like the A1 number one star that is now back.
Well, he is really like your A1 number one star, regardless of brand, you know, other than the Rock, I suppose. But, you know, Roman is the guy that I think has, he's been your main character for, you know, the better part of what, the past 3-4 years, really even more than that. So, I you know, it's good push for SmackDown, gave you something to look forward to beyond, I think, all the major events that they already paid off here for Raw.
One other story that didn't get to over the last couple of days, but this was very bizarre, as this whole UFC antitrust series of cases has been. So Dana White, who, I mean, has stated, you know, I don't pay any attention to this suit. Well, he's paid a little bit of attention to it. He was interviewed by Kevin Ioli over the weekend and stated that he feels this is getting personal between himself and Richard Boulware. And he says, this was his quote to Kevin Ioli: "Let me say this. It's probably the only thing I've said since this whole thing's been going on. It's getting to a point now where this feels personal. You know, I went to high school with this guy. Me and Lorenzo went to high school with him. I don't know what the hell me or Lorenzo did to him in high school, but this seems very, very personal. Yeah, we went to high school with this guy." And that transcription coming from MMAfighting.com. So, Wade, this suit has been going on for nearly a decade. Richard Boulware has been attached to his case for years. And Dana White just casually drops, "Yeah, we went to high school together." So this became this whole story over the weekend. And reporter Mike Russell did uncover yearbook footage of the fact that, yes, Dana White, Lorenzo Fertitta, and Richard Boulware all went to Bishop Gorman High School in Las Vegas. Now, they were not in the same year. Richard Boulware was 2 years ahead of them. And there is no evidence that they ran in the same circles, that they had really anything going on in terms of any kind of link between them. But this is quite astounding that you have the fact that these guys all attended the same high school together. And if the UFC was so gung-ho on getting rid of Richard Boulware, you would think, like, this detail, they would have, like, pushed this a lot earlier in the case. And I think it's only now that I don't even know how this, like, did Dana White just casually mention this to the lawyers, like, all these years in? Hey, by the way, I don't know if this is actually going to mean anything. I mean, just the fact that you go to a high school, it does not mean that's a conflict of interest. You would have to, I think, prove that there is some conflict here, which there does not appear to be any evidence of. But if you're the defendants, I'm sure they're going to try and push this, that the judge should recuse himself because he is the barrier between a settlement. And you get rid of this judge, you might get a much more favorable judge who, yes, is just going to rubber stamp this settlement that both sides have agreed to. And if it comes down to a yearbook, this is just the most insane case.
Yeah, maybe a movie could be made about it at some point. I mean, I don't know. Like, in Vegas at that time, were there what was the population like, I suppose? And how many high schools were there? Could they just have, you know, had limited options and therefore found themselves in the same school if you happen to live in Vegas of that generation? I don't know. Do you think anything will happen as a result of this discovery?
My gut would say no. I find it astounding that, like, it's this many years into this case. And, like, if you were going to bring this up, I mean, it feels pretty disingenuous that this was not an issue for all these years. Dana White just woke up one day and remembered this. This could not have been too much of a problem.
Maybe he didn't know until he found out from some other source.
Well, then that is evidence that it really doesn't matter. If you didn't even remember that you went to high school with this guy, how could he have had a problem with you? How could there be any personal? How could this be personal if you didn't even know you went to high school with the guy? Or you've just been sitting on this?
He doesn't know why it would be. That's what he's saying, right?
Well, I guess. Anyway, we'll see if this leads to anything. The next date to focus on is August 19th, when the parties are scheduled for a meeting. The trial for the Kung Lee case is scheduled for October 28th. Those are the dates to look upon. But all of this is it's a moving target to see if the sides come together, if they try to establish new terms of a settlement that meet the criteria for Richard Boulware, or if this story somehow gains any traction. I don't know if it's really going to be. It's more just a bizarre detail attached to a case that has come back from the dead over the past week. Also coming back from the dead was SmackDown on Friday, which was up 16% in the demo and up 6% in viewership from the prior week, going against the opening ceremonies of the Olympics. This Friday's show leading into SummerSlam did 2,179,000 viewers and a 0.60 in the demo, highest in 2 weeks, and the Olympic coverage on NBC, which aired from 8 till 11 Eastern, did 13.1 million viewers and a 2.29 rating in the demo. Giant numbers that NBC is having a lot of success with the Olympics. So SmackDown, this was still not a great SmackDown number, but it was up from the week prior. Rampage, on the other hand, got demolished, and it was also airing against the final hour of NBC's coverage, falling to the lowest viewership ever in Rampage's history, including episodes that aired out of the time slot, 209,000 viewers, down 32% from last week, and a 0.07 in the demo, which was down 28%. So lowest overall viewership ever, and ties with two other episodes, which were out of the time slot, for the lowest 18 to 49 audience ever for a show that was certainly not loaded up in any regard. You had the MXM Collection against Private Party as the main event. There were a series of squashes and Wheeler Yuta and the Butcher. I would say even by Rampage standards, this was a pretty low name value show. And you were going against, I would state the Olympics would be the biggest effect here, but it was a not a great number for Rampage. However, you also look at just the primetime numbers that Programming Insider lists. This is still like among the higher cable numbers in terms of just in the demo. It does tell you like a 0.07. It's still going to get you like a respectable finish on Friday nights. Granted, this is by Rampage standards not good at all. I'm not sugarcoating this, but it really does tell you that the bar for success on Friday nights, it's exceptionally low, that this would still be among, you know, the higher watch shows in its time slot on cable, regardless. But those were your rating stories from Friday night. Great American Bash, week two, Tuesday night. Ethan Page takes on Oro Mensah for the NXT title. We have Axiom and Nathan Frazier against MSK, Wes Lee and Zachary Wentz. Or they are MSK, even with... I wonder if it'll be Nash Carter for one night. Will he revert to Nash Carter for the MSK reunion, or is that...
They explain they're MSK when they're a tag team with just Wentz and
I forget. When it's Wentz and Wesley.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Kalani Jordan defends the North American title against Tatum Paxley. Joe Hendry against Joe Coffey, after Joe Coffey had the gall to get upset about his diss track. Trick Williams takes on Pete Dunne, and Ren Sinclair against Kendall Gray among the matches listed for Tuesday night, which Braden Davey will be covering Tuesday night. And the last thing is Dynamite on Wednesday night in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. We have an Anything Goes match between Jeff Jarrett and Bryan Danielson, where Ricky Steamboat is listed as the special guest, not the special guest referee. He's listed as special guest. So I imagine he's going to have a chair with his name on it that he's going to get to sit in at ringside. That would be my thought.
And he'll probably play some role.
I can see him getting involved. Yes. Mm-hmm. MJF against Kyle Fletcher for the American Championship after MJF's successful defense against Templario on Friday night. And Katsuyori Shibata, who noted on Collision that he has family from Winston-Salem, takes on Brian Keith. So hometown hero, Katsuyori Shibata in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So that is happening on Wednesday night. Are you ready for another packed week of pro wrestling, Way?
Sure.
It never ends.
Yes. Yes, I am. Yes. Are you ready?
No, I'm never ready. I had to watch so much stuff on Sunday night. It was my brain was just on, it felt like it was just falling apart by the end of it. I needed a break from wrestling.
Do you still enjoy it at that point?
I really enjoyed that Goto Takeshita match. That woke me up. I enjoy that. When it's good, I love it.
So, I hope for many more of those in the week to come.
Watch, you're going to get like the two best shows of the whole tournament. Like just like barn burners. You just swoop in and out. You're just going to have the big ones this week, the core Q and Hall shows. All right. All your news can be found postwrestling.com and postwrestlingcafe.com. Four shows coming your way on the cafe, not just two G1 shows. We're back with Rewind to SmackDown on Friday. Your calls will be welcomed after a week off. And then Collision Course returning to Saturday night with Kate and John Cena. Also, a programming note this week, Pollock and Thurston coming a day later on Thursday at 3 Eastern so that we can react to the TKO earnings call, which is happening Thursday morning at 8 a.m. Be up bright and early with Mark Shapiro. If you don't drink coffee that early, Mark Shapiro will be your caffeine fix at 8 in the morning as he's screaming about brand integration. That's how I'm going to wake up on Thursday.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. On to the show we go. The CFG Bank Arena in Baltimore, Maryland. WrestleTix noting 11,171 tickets distributed for this show, which kicks off with Ludwig Kaiser in the ring to welcome our new champion, Gunther. Michael Cole notes it was the most watched SummerSlam in history, and they've gotten away from sending out those post premium live event press releases where they give us all their, it was two times the viewing of this, it was up 2x this and that, and none of those anymore. However, this SummerSlam did benefit from the fact this was right in the middle of the Olympics, and Peacock, I am sure, has had a giant swing in subscribers that there's probably some impact that SummerSlam received as a result of that. You know, you go from pole vaulting or full contact kayaking, and then you turn on SummerSlam on Saturday night.
And did they announce any?
No numbers. They've announced no numbers. I'm sure Peacock, I would think at some point they're probably going to give, at some point we'll know what the number was during the Olympics, because that number will be focused upon to see what kind of churn there is after the Olympics if people hold on to it. Because when they ran the NFL game back on earlier this year, that was the thought, was all these people are going to sign up and then they're all going to drop the service. And that did not happen. There was a lot of retention when all these people signed up for Peacock earlier this year. And the Olympics are the next big thing that Peacock had on their calendar this year. So out comes Gunther, and it was a mix of reactions. Like, you had the boos, but there was some not insignificant "you deserve it" chants as well from the crowd in Baltimore. And Gunther says, "If you thought my run as IC champion was historic, wait till you see what I do with this belt." And he is ready for everyone. Nothing can catch him off guard. And then he's caught off guard by Randy Orton coming out on Raw. And Gunther admits, "That caught me off guard." And Orton takes credit for Gunther being champion because they had a disputed match at King of the Ring where his shoulders were not on the mat, but the ref's decision is final, but Triple H promised a rematch. Orton wants that match in Germany at Bash in Berlin, says, "I'm the only guy in that locker room that can match you," and talks about how great they both are, and then says that he compares themselves to Flair and Steamboat. That is what they are promising you on August 31st. Flair and Steamboat 35 years later.
A modern equivalent.
Yeah. So Take that, special guest. Maybe they'll have a special guest in Germany. They'll have the other equation. So Gunther says all of that is true, and it's a stain on his record not pinning Randy Orton at King of the Ring. But if the voices in your head think you can beat me, then they're telling you the wrong thing. He accepts the match and then pulls in Randy and says nothing catches him out of nowhere. And Randy comes back and says, "Doesn't matter. I want you to see it coming." And that's our match for August the 31st with, I guess we should note this at the beginning of the build up to Bash in Berlin, that this will probably never be repeated on WWE television, that the man was actually born in Austria, but has his obvious ties to Germany. But for this next month, he will be German in the build up for this.
Yeah, my kind of like a, I guess, Toronto, Orangeville type of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was a great segment and a great, you know, celebration moment for Gunther here. You know, there are people who might be complaining about there being too much sports entertainment on the show as of late. I do think somebody like Gunther being at the top of the food chain on Raw is sort of a cure for that. You know, Gunther, as he can't help but do, you know, ushers a lot more seriousness and storytelling into everything he does. And I thought this was your first sample here. I found it interesting how much they were like doing the mutual respect angle between the two of them, because, you know, it wasn't so long ago when Gunther was insulting everybody, you know, Damian Priest and everybody in America for being street trash. This was a very straightforward celebration moment for Gunther. Yes, he kind of still had that cockiness and just complete confidence in his ability to keep this championship forever. But, you know, he really didn't do anything to insult the crowd, did nothing that felt like anti-American. Orton came out here talking about how good the belt looks on him. No Kaiser to come here to attack Orton from behind. And it makes me wonder if they're just doing all of this to set up, you know, what will undoubtedly be a big babyface reaction for Gunther in Germany. And I find it interesting how WWE, you know, tends to maybe navigate some of that. We've seen it all the time, you know, going into one of these sort of non-North America shows with a hometown representative who's oftentimes a heel. But usually they do the whole storytelling with them as a heel until the night of. Now, they might be starting this already from this point on with Gunther seemingly maybe already in that tweener role, but maybe this is just for tonight, and next week he'll be calling everybody street trash again. I think Randy is the perfect first defense for Gunther. I mean, the controversy coming out of the King of the Ring is still top of mind for a lot of people. Priest is busy with Balor, of course, so you're not getting to that rematch. Orton is a very justified headliner for a pay-per-view really anywhere, and I'm sure the people that are going to be seeing this match in Berlin are happy. And now this time, rather than just having it take place in the finals of the King of the Ring, they actually get a bit of time to tell a bit of story. So I'm curious to see if they continue pushing this as a double babyface feud, because I really don't see Berlin booing either guy in this match.
No, and I could see them just building this to have that incredible atmosphere, like it's a world championship match with two big stars. And I think that's fine to build things like that, where it's just going to be this contest of who's better. Yeah, we'll see if they stick to this, because that was my takeaway too, the way that they positioned Gunther here as, you know, almost deferring to Randy Orton as his equal. Perhaps some begrudging respect for the fact this man was never homeless.
That we know of.
That we're aware of, yes. Yeah. I mean, I think that is his, you know, his... That's the kryptonite he sees in certain individuals like Damian Priest. So, yep, that was our segment. And we failed to mention off the top, commercial-free first hour on Sci-Fi. So they are really trying to... This was already going to be... I think even on Sci-Fi, I thought they were going to do a strong number, but they're going to have the bonus of this commercial-free. We'll see how... I think this is really going to test the ceiling of what a Raw can do on Sci-Fi, coming off SummerSlam, adding the commercial-free angle to things. And how did you feel the first 60 minutes went by? Did you feel it a bit of there were quite a lot of video packages in this too?
Yeah. I tend to think the show's better with commercials, actually, like especially during portions of the match where they're clearly like pacing it the same as if it had commercials. Like people go to the outside, they do a big move, and rather than just cut away to a commercial break, they keep the frame on. And the content of the match is not necessarily good enough to justify being on camera for most of the time. So I almost rather that they go to commercial break so that we don't have to suffer through the commercials later on in the show, which you got a lot of
tons
on this one.
Jackie Redmond is with Sheamus, who calls Kaiser a human Ken doll, but he also has his sights on Pete Dunne, and the young guys are trying to make a name off him, and he welcomes it and gives away his game plan. He's going after Ludwig Kaiser's recently injured ribs. So that's our first match of the show, and I thought they had a really strong match here. Great pace between these two. Very hard-hitting match. Sheamus took a bump before... this was funny, because Sheamus is hitting him with these chops, and then Kaiser is supposed to, like... attack the knee of Sheamus, but Sheamus went to take the bump before the drop kick connected. So we had like Sheamus just basically like falling in midair, and then Kaiser had to complete the drop kick. So then Kaiser plays possum, holding his ribs on the floor, but that sets up a cheap shot onto Sheamus. And Kaiser tries his own version of the 10 beats, gets stopped with a clothesline, and Sheamus is absorbing chops, strikes back, and just walloping Kaiser. Hits a Irish curse, followed by the white noise, and applies the clover leaf. Sheamus gets snapped with his throat on the top rope, goes to the 10 beats, and then is hit to the floor. When Pete Dunne appears, tries to hit him with the shillelagh, misses and hits the post, and Dunne gets drilled with a knee into the ring. Sheamus goes, and after an enziguri, comes back with a knee strike and brogue kick, pinning Kaiser. Big pop for the finish in 11 minutes and 20 seconds as Pete Dunne's interference gets thwarted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pete Dunne, who was on NXT and finally gave us an explanation for why he's been so pissed off. I almost felt like it was worth, I mean, he's working an ankle on NXT as well, but I almost felt it was worth either playing on Raw or playing a different version of it on Raw, because I would say a lot more people are watching this version of the story, of his story, rather than the NXT one. But we got an explanation. He's really pissed off that he was with Sheamus, and the most he got out of it was a stupid name.
It's the name.
It's the name. That's why he's so angry. Yeah. This was a good match here with Kaiser.
He can't get upset at the person who came up with the stupid name. So Sheamus.
In storyline, Sheamus is the one who named it Butch.
Yeah.
Probably made him bark as well.
Chairman of the board, Sheamus.
Yeah. I thought this was a good match. Sheamus, I think, has been having an excellent run, you know, on this return. I will say, I think his movement and like flexibility, especially like in the neck, is starting to show signs of wear. And I don't think it's that controversial to say, you know, for a guy like working this style at his age. But I think his work ethic and babyface appeal are stronger than ever. And in many ways, like it has been for like a Tanahashi, for instance, sometimes the lack of mobility really like actually helps your babyface appeal, because people can like just sympathize with you that much more. But Sheamus is like, he's emptying the tank every single one of these performances. Okay. Like his body might, like, you know, not be where it was when he was in his 20s, but he's like working harder than he ever has in every single one of these matches. He just kind of like, you know, he has to live up to this like banger style that he's developed now. And I would say that's really helped him move into like this beloved veteran phase of his career. I was a bit surprised to see like Kaiser lose clean his first match back, even with like Pete Dunne helping him here. But, you know, I could see this being the type of booking where like Kaiser loses this, but eventually gets the big win on Sheamus and maybe like does a bit more damage to Sheamus coming out of it. So we'll see where that goes. But the focus is Dunne versus Sheamus coming out of this.
I almost wonder if we're going to see something like linking Kaiser with Dunne in this whole thing. Like, I think those two would be stronger together, perhaps. It was interesting to see like Kaiser introduced Gunther, but was kind of that whole segment. He wasn't in the ring. He was kind of just off, I guess, on the floor or something, just waiting for the segment to end for his own match.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just hiding. Yeah. Then we had our first of several Wyatt 6 videos throughout the night. And this video notes that it was 11 years ago in Baltimore when the Wyatt family made their main roster debut on July 8th of 2013. And here we are 11 years later, where they will make their in-ring debut in the same city. This video being voiced by Bo Dallas and featuring clips of the old Wyatt family and mixing it in with the new version.
Right, yeah. So a bit of added sentimentality for Baltimore.
Damian Priest storms to the ring and he calls out Finn Balor, wants to fight right now. And when he doesn't come out, calls him a coward and says that Balor knows where he comes from, knows his story. And I had usually been on my own until I found the Judgment Day, and it was a chance for me to be part of something. But then at my documentary premiere on Saturday, I heard what the fans had to say about me. And it turns out my family just got a lot bigger, and it's you, the people. The crowd's like, yeah, we're your family, man.
And it was Balor, a you people promo, except I guess as a babyface.
The babyface you people promo.
Yeah.
He says, Balor didn't just take the title from me. He took the title from all of us, and I disappointed my family, and that's the reason that bothers me the most. and Balor, I will be the reason for your pain and suffering. This was quite the character shift for Damian Priest.
Well, as a guy who now fights for the people and not his own.
I felt it was a little strong just in the
You weren't at the documentary premiere, John.
That is
so
true.
No,
that is true. Obviously this was like a life-changing screening.
Yeah, you don't know what these people said to him after that screening. So I mean, listen, they have to push this guy now as a babyface, and the promo did verge on like corniness, you know, with the whole you people stuff.
Family, but he
now
also looks like he's like flying to the ring here with his wings.
That's the intent, isn't
yeah,
it?
This is, yeah, okay.
Yes, anyway, so, but I thought the delivery was really strong, you know, like I think his promo has been maybe the most criticized part of his game up until this point. I think by the end here, he managed to really figure it out. You know, like his aggression sounds really strong. I mean, I think he was trying to go with like the laid back Scott Hall thing for quite a while. I much prefer this guy with something to be angry about and revenge to get. And you can hear the passion in his voice. I thought it sounded authentic. I thought it sounded very good. My family member, Damian Priest, making me proud.
Family. He is fully Vin Diesel now.
Yeah, he is. Yes, he should come out in a Charger, shaved head.
With a Corona.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. So then Balor appears on the screen and states that he blames Damian Priest because he is the one that betrayed the Judgment Day. We were supposed to have each other's backs no matter what, and there was to be no leader. But all of that changed when you became champion. And this guy, one of the last people to still have a physical photo, he pulled up this photo, not on his phone. He like someone had like a Kodak camera at SummerSlam last year when he faced Seth Rollins. And this was when Priest had the briefcase and was at ringside teasing the cash in and said,
are we sure it wasn't a still shot? He just printed, maybe he put his camera up on the TV and took a photo.
Still, yeah. It still went to a lot of work to.
You probably have to go to a Walmart or Staples to, you know, get this thing printed out just to use in this promo. Maybe he's been using it as motivation.
Yeah, maybe he has a dark room and he developed it himself.
Well, we know he has a dark room. That's where he filmed this promo.
That's right. You're right. Answering.
He just finished developing the lone photograph.
Kodak
Judgment
Balor.
Day are a photo photography club. We've figured it out.
So he says that after this loss last year, you told me to man up and get over it. So I waited a year. Balor's been crafting this for a year. Don't ever interfere in this guy's matches, okay? That's a warning. And Balor says, I'm going to wait until you feel safe and have almost forgotten about me. And I will attack you when you least expect it. And he's going to be there to stab him in the back. Again and again and again. It almost sounded like this guy was going to disappear for like 9 months and then attack him, but he was plotting this for about 2 hours from now. And then we get the reveal of Balor in his dark room. And guess what? Guess who's part of the photo company? It's Carlito, JD, Dom, and Liv Morgan, the new and maybe improved Judgment Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they look like a photo club. Totally. Look at this.
They definitely need some light.
Yes. I thought this was excellent stuff. You know, they've in one move turned Priest into a top baby face. You're getting Balor up from a position where he was largely seen as a bit of a sidekick or a lackey, I could say, you know, as a member of the Judgment Day. He's now the leader and the only veteran. Well, I guess, other than Carlito, but you know, the most seriously, booked and pushed member of the group. It's been a long time since we've seen a serious Finn Balor. Now the group is fully into its heel role again without the babyface, I guess you could say, graduates of the group in Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest. Balor, I thought, cut a pretty, you know, good, serious promo. His explanation about this being months in the making, I think, gives you some hints about what all the Liv Morgan background teases were about months ago. We've seen Liv in the background have moments with pretty much everybody in this picture, except for Priest and except for Rhea, and they were either talking about plotting this entire thing against the both of them, or maybe they were sharing focusing tips, maybe, what film grade to use. But she's been planning this, not just with any single member, as we had suspected. Was it Dom? Was it Finn? She's been planning this with everybody.
Is there a chance Carlito was the mastermind behind all of this? Was he the puppet master?
Anything's possible.
Probably not that, though. So, yeah, a very good segment overall. I think this set up quite a bit for where they were going and aligning Balor's sidekicks here for the next chapter of the Judgment Day divorce.
Yeah, so, and, I had wondered what taking Priest and Rhea would do to the Judgment Day. But I think having Dom still in there now harder than ever, and having Liv Morgan in the group now harder than ever, I think continues to make the Judgment Day feel like a pretty strong entity and a complete stable, even without their top two stars out in there anymore.
Adam Pearce meets with Bronson Reed, who complains about not being booked on the show despite beating Sheamus last week, and Sheamus got a match tonight, and realizes I need to carve my own path, which was an ominous warning for what was to come. Lyra Valkyria against Shayna Baszler with Zoe Stark and Sonya Deville in the corner, and they mention that last week Katana Chance broke her nose when she was hit with the Z360 by Zoe Stark in their match. So no one in Lyra's corner. She's all by herself. There's an arm wringer by Baszler who goes after the elbow of Lyra. Michael Cole brings up that today he learned that Shayna Baszler cooks various soups.
Interesting. Interesting.
Called her a unique individual.
Okay. Why? Because she makes soups?
Yeah.
What's so crazy about making soups? What's in the soups?
I can't imagine like they're too wild. Like, it's soup. I appreciate a good soup, but I don't know if I've ever had a soup where I'm like, oh my God, what a unique individual you are.
You never had her soups. I mean,
I guess so. Yeah.
Maybe she likes to put, crazy shit in there. Maybe she puts like blood in there or something. You know, she loves to drink blood. We remember that that's been established with her character.
So it comes with some iron and maybe
that would be weird.
Some curry fooda.
Uda Klatcha. A Shayna Baszler soup stand or like a soup restaurant. Yeah, I'd be the first to try it.
Can't wait. There's a gut-wrench sit-out powerbomb by Lyra, then kicks Stark off the apron and hits a driving dropkick to Deville through the rope, leaves her back to Baszler, who goes for the Kirifuda. Lyra stops it, hits the Nightwing when Deville and Stark run in for the DQ at 3:39. They start beating on her 3-on-1 when damage control run out, clearing the ring of the Shooters.
The Shooters, yeah. I really and do wish like there was this faction had a name already, because I'm very...
McAfee did refer to them as that. It almost feels like it's a default name until they're assigned something
just
permanent.
Just officially give that to them then, because like
Maybe they will.
In the ease of my typing, I just write Team Forehead and I kind of feel bad about it. So yeah, please give me an official name for this stable.
Final Testament video. The Doomsday Clock is going to strike midnight tonight, and everyone freaked out that we were going to get a 4-hour Raw. And he shows highlights of the 10 years of the New Day and all good things must come to an end. But they didn't have to be this way for Xavier Woods. Kofi Kingston became his own man, but Woods was too afraid to become his own man. Tonight, we will witness the death of the New Day.
Okay, interesting. We'll see if we do.
Yeah. Great reaction there by Paul Ellering, as always. Contributing part.
Yeah, like... this guy has to fly all the way here. I mean, for that matter, like Scarlett as well. They fly here, get dressed, I'm sure enjoy some soups and catering, then just like have to pose for this, and that's kind of it.
It's a trios team that is represented by five people.
Well, as I've said in the past, this is a stable of five members, three of which essentially are managers, okay? It's really a tag team with three managers. That's what the Final Testament are.
Who I feel in... AOP have about one TV match a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's an interesting group. The Creeds are with Ivy Nile, and Maxine walks up and says, hey, Ivy, what the hell? We haven't talked for weeks, and your guys have been destroying Otis and Tozawa. And Ivy's like, oh, you know, they're just, it's Julius and Brutus. Come on. Gable walks in and says, Maxine offers nothing of value to you, Ivy, and tells Maxine to leave them alone. You can even keep the Alpha Academy name. This was the easiest IP battle in the history of litigation, and they are taking down the Wyatt Six tonight.
Yeah.
And we learned that Gable has already, I guess, registered his new name with his new family. A lot of new families for him.
You want to start fresh sometimes, you know? You the IP is only as valuable as the people that are in the group, right? So he has confidence that he can build something new.
Then CM Punk starts off the second hour. Huge reaction for him. And before he can even get into his promo, he takes a moment to congratulate new UFC welterweight champion Bilal Muhammad, who beat Leon Edwards last weekend at UFC 304. The amount of people in this arena seemed like it was in the single digits that were aware of who Bilal Muhammad was. But I thought a true friend in CM Punk to shout this guy out on national television as the new welterweight champion.
You think Bilal Muhammad will do the same? Congratulations, CM Punk, on winning, or I guess
he hasn't won anything.
Whenever he comes back and wins a match, I guess.
Okay. Well, as soon as he wins that match, then we'll know. The clock is ticking for Bilal Muhammad.
He needs to do it in the middle of the octagon, just as CM Punk did in the middle of a WWE ring.
This could become like a fun thing if it, you know, bounces back. This is the true synergy that was the whole purpose of this merger.
Yeah.
So he says he's happy despite losing on SummerSlam because he hasn't been to Baltimore in 10 years. And when he's knocked down, he gets back up. And some people hate that he doesn't stay down. He says, I was told that I would be out for 9 months in January. I did it in 5. Which I think everyone was doing the counting here, and it didn't quite add up, but close enough.
How many months was it?
I mean, end of January till, let's give him end of July. That's 6 months.
So, yeah, okay, well. Maybe he was ready before.
He still beat it. He still beat it by 3 months.
Well, he's counting to the point where he actually was cleared.
Well, I don't think he was cleared 5 weeks ago, but sure. We'll round back for him for the sake of his timing here. It's a tremendous recovery, seriously, for a guy like this. And we know how long he was out for the last triceps tear as well. So he says that...
Well, that's what happens when you have... doctors that are recommended rather than, I guess, him having to find his own doctors, as he would say.
He could have gone in that direction in this promo. Thankfully, he didn't. He said he is back. SummerSlam was the start of my road to WrestleMania, and the summer of hate didn't begin the way I wanted, but it's still summer, and he needs less talking, more fighting. He wants Drew McIntyre again. But before Drew comes out, it's Seth Rollins, and he comes out. And if Saturday was his ode to Shawn Michaels, tonight it was his nod to Kevin Diesel Nash, because he was out in this whole leather tassel contraption that he was wearing, and says he is in a good mood too, because after 10 years, it's finally time for me to put you in the dirt. And they are about to fight, but Drew McIntyre appears in the audience and gloats about the win. Punk, you brought the fight. You proved you can still go, but you're no longer the best in the world. I am. And he shows off the bracelet, and this is too much for Punk. He's got Rollins in his crosshairs, but that goddamn bracelet. And he runs out into the crowd, runs after Drew, and that eliminates those two from the equation. And as Rollins is left in the ring, Bronson Reed jumps him out of nowhere, lays him out with a DVD, pair of sentons, and then one tsunami, two tsunamis. The officials are in. They're checking. Reed climbs back up. He hits a third tsunami. He climbs up and hits a fourth, a fifth. And every time the crowd is just enjoying this more and more. They're treating this like it's like this guy is just like hitting home runs blindfolded. They're amazed by this power being demonstrated. They're chanting one more time at Reed, and he hits a sixth tsunami. Rollins is coughing up blood, and then he climbs up for another. They finally get Rollins out of the way, and the crowd actually boos when Rollins is away. They were so into Bronson Reed hitting these tsunamis. This reminded me of like Vader taking out Gorilla Monsoon. I thought this angle was great. This was the best thing they've done with Bronson Reed period. I'd include NXT. Like, he had much more to write home about at NXT than the main roster. But this, to me, was the strongest angle they've done with this guy this whole time.
It was a very old school feeling type of angle to me. And for me, it reminded me of Yokozuna hitting 3 bonsai drops to Hacksaw Jim Duggan in a row. As a child, that was like a moment that I think,
if he had buried Seth in the American flag after this?
That would have just kind of made it even worse. But yeah, like, I thought Hacksaw Jim Duggan was dead. And maybe some children out there, were crying, to their parents. What happened to Seth, mommy? Well,
turns out he didn't put CM Punk in the dirt. But someone else did.
No, he got swept up here in the tsunami.
This was great. And you're going to get a hell of a match out of these two as well. And this, I just thought this, like, you made a guy on Raw. Like, this instantly elevated Reed. I don't think anyone saw this being a fallout program when you had really set up this, like, three-way program that you still have Rollins attached to with Drew and Punk. But this certainly feels as though this is going to occupy Seth and keep Drew with Punk.
Totally. I think they've done such a great job of simultaneously building both Rollins and Punk and Drew and Punk at the same time here coming out of SummerSlam. I think there was some criticism I saw from people talking about how Seth just kind of felt a bit like shoved into what should have been a grudge match between Drew and Punk. But I think they managed to do it in a very like organic way, or at least in a way that like simultaneously makes both of those programs feel hotter. I think Rollins versus Punk feels hotter than ever with Punk attacking him at the at SummerSlam, and then them nearly coming to blows tonight. Like, tonight was essentially, hey, we're about to give you the match, but just wait, we're gonna get to it later. And the sort of get to it later is Drew versus Punk, which is hotter than ever after the result on Saturday. So Punk has two simultaneous very strong programs right now that are like both being built up really well. And I love the struggle on Punk's face as Drew was showing off the bracelet and like Punk was locking eyes with Seth because he was about to like, engage in this brawl. But Punk, you could see the struggle in his face as he was trying to ignore Drew. And it's almost as if like for CM Punk, anything to do with the bracelet, it causes an involuntary reaction that his body just can't physically ignore. And he has to take his attention away from it and he has to get that bracelet because he's that obsessed. I love that sort of like flaw for especially a babyface here. And then, of course, you got Bronson Reed being added into this whole thing in about, I think, as magnificent of a way as you could want for somebody who up until this point has been pretty much a forgotten mid-carder, but he's got a really over finisher, and they emphasize that to, times 100 here. They do something that they do really rarely, and that's have him spam a finisher over and over and over and again to the 5. That was rare. Now, this scenario... It did start to feel pretty ridiculous with all these people in the ring here. Okay, when Hacksaw Jim Duggan took 3 bonsai drops from Yokozuna, there weren't like 5, what, how many? 10 people in the ring there who could have gotten him out of the way. Seth had these 10 people that were just standing there when you had every opportunity. I would say after the 3rd tsunami, okay, you kind of know what this guy's going to be doing. Maybe let's roll this dude out of the ring, or at least out of position from, where this man could dive. But it's like, he's getting to the top rope. We can't do anything. Let's just, all we can do is wave our hands. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Got a great reaction, put the finisher over strongly, and finally gave Reed this like identifiable, memorable moment in his career that I think he's been lacking ever since he's been called up. And he immediately gets shot up there to have a feud with one of the top baby faces in the entire company.
Yeah, I think it's often a mistake when they, like, it's like the adage of why 10 chair shots when you could get the effectiveness out of one that's really sold great. And they really love to do the over and over and over again. And I typically feel it's diminishing returns. I did not feel that in this one because this audience got more and more intense with each successive one. I think they, I think Rollins, you really need to have him sell this significantly, to really establish this tsunami. I just thought this was a great angle to get Reed up and running to a big spot for whenever this match is done. And the audience, they loved it. Not exactly sympathetic towards Seth Rollins for this, but they were just loving the chaos of it all and watching a 350-pound dude jump off the top turnbuckle 6 times.
Yeah, I liked it. Let's see what the follow-up is.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Jackie is with Adam Pearce reacting to the attack and asks for an update on Seth Rollins. This had literally happened a minute ago. And Pearce is like, I think it's a little early for that. He's going to be going to the hospital and he's going to be treated for internal bleeding. And then Punk is in the back and he's searching for Drew McIntyre. Pearce somehow, between the last segment and now, has removed Drew McIntyre from the arena. So, guy worked quick. He found Drew, who had been chased by this man, got him out of the arena, and this was all in the span of like 3 minutes. So, man worked quick. And that was the end of Drew and Punk for tonight, but certainly feels as though they're going to run that one back. And my God, what a polarizing match for people on Saturday. This has become a heavily debated match, and looks like they'll probably run this one back, maybe in Germany.
Maybe in Germany, I could see them even pausing it. And what's the next one? Is it SummerSlam? After? What? Oh, what? Bad Blood. I could see Bad Blood being the space for that as well.
That's a long time. That's October. That's like half a triceps recovery.
They went 6 months, or they went, 8 months before they got to their match.
Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods against AOP. We have New Day dressed as Ninja Turtles for this new action figure line, with Roman Reigns dressed as Shredder for these action figures. You would have thought they could maybe license Kevin Nash to play Shredder.
How many would they sell, I wonder? Probably plenty.
Maybe a few less. So this is, okay, that's Shredder. Shredder Reigns.
Mm-hmm.
And the New Day were, who were they? Donatello and Michelangelo, I think they were representing tonight.
Donatello and Michelangelo, yes. Mm-hmm.
Look at that. So after the commercial break, Woods and Rezar are in, and Woods is attacking with super kicks and hits a missile drop kick. Kingston hits this insane trust fall to the floor, almost overshot Akam going into the barricade. And then Karrion Kross cheap shots Woods, knocking him off the turnbuckle. And then Odyssey Jones runs down the aisle wearing a New Day shirt and attacks Karrion Kross, sends him over the barricade. Pat McAfee, probably speaking for many people, who's that? And this leads to Xavier Woods with a small package victory, pinning Rezar at 6:55. And then AOP are double-teaming Woods. So Jones fights off both men, and he's kind of just doing these big man spots. But then all of a sudden, he lifts these two guys. And AOP, these are not small men. They bounce these two like some of those payments for World Entertainment Superstars, whatever that promotion was that they were going to run. And he drops these two, and then Karrion Kross runs into this extended black hole slam. This was some super impressive strength that they exuded from Odyssey Jones. And we'll get to the backstage follow-up, but Odyssey Jones, veteran of 2 drafts where he was drafted to Raw. Looks like this one's going to stick.
A 2-year veteran of the main roster, or at least 1.5.
This guy has not wrestled since March.
Yeah, well, it's his first TV appearance, I guess, at least on the main roster since he was called up in 2023.
That draft, I don't think he appeared once on Raw after that draft.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was redrafted this year.
Did he even appear on Raw, or was he drawn?
No, I don't think so.
Off air. Yeah. So I think you're always happy when they find something for somebody rather than, like, I'm sure, like, maybe they were considering cutting him at some point. But this is the role now up until this point. OK, so the beatdown, I think, was really well done. Got some great reactions for this sidewalk slam. He looked very impressive, just, you know, using his size and doing a lot of big power moves. Now, the resulting photo of him, like, and the suggestion of him being the third member of the New Day, was definitely mixed with
Did
with
you notice how reactions. Kofi instructed him to fix his shirt so people could see?
Sure, yeah, and to look at the hard camera, you know. I think he maybe needed some more time in the PC to learn that one. But there was going to be more to tell
yes.
with this story, which was very yes. interesting.
JD McDonagh does a promo. He has a match with Damian Priest today and said his favorite part of SummerSlam was Priest realizing what Balor had done when he saw the replay. And he got arrogant. He was blinded by the betrayal. And I sacrificed my body to keep you on top. You never wanted me in the Judgment Day, but I'm the one guy that Finn Balor would listen to above you. So he's implying Priest was always jealous of JD. Odyssey Jones is with the New Day in their locker room, and Kofi explains to Woods that he struck up a friendship with Odyssey Jones at the Performance Center while he was rehabbing. And Xavier Woods is caught off guard by this. He did not know Odyssey Jones was going to show up, and he did not know about this new friendship of Kofi's and the idea that Kofi is bringing this guy into the group and never consulted Xavier Woods.
Right. Yes, I find it very interesting. So, you know, Kofi and Odyssey in this scene, they're hamming up these celebrations to like an obnoxious, unrealistic level. Well, that was great. Like, they were really palling it up like as if he was already a full-fledged member. And Woods kind of plays the rest of us who find something a bit odd about this entire scene. And listen, anybody who's going
odd
to
Jones.
Anybody who's going to step into this Big E role is going to be met with it's going to be awkward. You know, it's like it's replacing it's going to be more awkward than replacing the original two members of Destiny's Child, which really was in the
guys. We're going to call him Big O. That's his name. We used to call him Big O down in the PC.
Yeah. So I mean, if this was an old regime, that would have just been it would have actually happened. Okay. We like here's leave Cassidy as a member of the new Rockers, and let's just pretend nothing else like that, you know, ever happened. Or what is it, Lance Von Erich? You know, like this is the Lance.
We're
going to
call him Bigger E.
Sure.
He's bigger.
Yeah. But Woods is kind of coming in here, and he's here to remind us that, hey, everybody, yes, there is something really odd about this picture. And he's kind of giving a reaction that the rest of us are giving. Like, you know, what is this? And I find it fascinating because even though it seems like they might be done with the final testament now, they are continuing with the tease of a potential Woods and Kofi breakup through Odyssey Jones.
What a yeah. weird connection. Dude, this photo is awesome. This still photo tells you everything.
Yeah. So I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated because, okay, the Final Testament thing has been a complete flop, in my opinion. They've really not done anything to, I think, make me that much more interested. But they
Karrion
have
Cross planted the seeds of distrust. This was the whole plan.
That's
This is why Nakamura turned and AJ turned. And now this is you don't get to these crescendos without watering the plant, Way. And he was the water that has led to this garden of profitability for this money program.
He is a genius. Karrion Kross is really the mastermind behind the WWE, I would say. But I'm enjoying this direction. Again, this could completely be derail coming off of this, but I think this is promising. I want to see this tension being built between Woods and Kofi through the addition of this Big E replacement. And hopefully it means an eventual role for Big E that I think they're really saving up for.
I think ultimately it's like he either endorses him or he denounces.
There's no endorsing of this. This is if the resulting picture of this is Kofi Kingston breaking off on his own as a heel with Odyssey Jones as his like bodyguard, taking on like an Xavier Woods with a more kind of like serious babyface singles momentum, then I think that's a great result.
I love the shot of Xavier Woods, like just perfect for the scene. A-Town Down Under against Awesome Truth. Michael Cole made a Mid-South reference here. I don't know in relation to what here. We had a tag match. Miz gets the tag, double flapjack. He's doing his version of a comeback. hits a high cross. Truth tags himself in. So when Miz hits the high cross, he's not the legal man. He's a little frustrated. Truth then grabs Theory on his shoulders, swings him, and knocks Miz to the floor. And then Theory capitalizes, hits A-Town down, pinning Truth in 7:33. Miz looks upset, but then they hug it out. So the long burn for this one continues.
Yeah, they're really kind of like, you know, starting and stopping with this one.
And they've kind of just stopped with the Theory Waller stuff.
You're right. Yeah, they're both going through their breakup teases. Mm-hmm.
Priest does his promo, says this beating on JD has been coming for a long time. No one wanted him in the Judgment Day except for Balor. You're too dumb because you're being sent by Balor as the first bullet, and I'm going to send you straight to hell. So this guy's definitely finding his voice. Mm-hmm. Kathy Kelly interviews Bron Breakker, says it's been less than 3 years since I debuted in NXT. I'm already the IC champion. I'm not the target. I'm the hunter, and I'm coming for everyone. This champion was born for him. This championship, born for him.
Who birthed
20 it? Years before he was born, this title was conceived for him, and says that no one on the planet can take this nameplate off my belt. Mm-hmm. Which is not literally, but
you need a special tool to get it off, I guess.
This was non-press conference Braun.
It was a very different Braun from the one we heard at the press conference. So I think he's retaining very much the same character, somebody who's incredibly intense and very cocky and determined, and he really is being given, I guess, the Goldberg role minus the streak, you know, just the Goldberg intensity, I suppose, and the dominance and a very good, very confident promo, I thought, from Braun.
JD McDonagh with Carlito in his corner against Damian Priest. A lot of heat for JD, and he's getting chance. And Michael Cole noting the karate expert, Damian Priest, attacking with kicks. And then JD slides off the shoulders, runs Priest into the post, and a big tope suicida sets up the break. South of Heaven attempt, JD lands on his feet and hit this great top rope moonsault. Priest kicks out at two and hits the flatliner. Returning to his feet, fires back with kicks, big forearm smash, and a broken arrow. Pounce sends JD over the desk, and then inside the ring, hits a rebound lariat, knocks Carlito off the apron, and then the straps come down. And he calls for the South of Heaven when Finn Balor, when you least expect it, Finn Balor jumps him for the DQ at 10 minutes and 20 seconds. All of Judgment Day attack as Liv Morgan watches on, but then Priest is fighting them off one by one until he's left alone with Finn Balor, and he lifts him for the razor's edge. Liv Morgan pulls Balor to safety, and Dominic is in with the chop block, and with that, Rhea Ripley's music hits. She comes out to a gigantic pop, sprints to the ring, and catches Liv as Dominic runs for cover, and Liv is left here to get posted, and then Rhea tries for the razor's edge onto the desk, but Dom returns, rescuing Liv, and JD is left with Priest and Rhea, who attack him with a headbutt and South of Heaven, and it's Priest and Rhea hugging together, so keeping an alliance between these two, as they move forward.
Yeah, yeah. Ultra strong. Oh, what do they call them? The twins of something?
Oh, God.
The darkness twins or something?
Oh, Jesus. Okay, whatever.
Something like that. I don't know. I thought this was a really, really great closing angle here. They very successfully heightened Priest's babyface appeal by putting him in that 4-on-1 beatdown, and they took it even further by having him, like, essentially Hulk out of it. It's allowing him to finally get face to face with Balor, who barely escaped thanks to Liv Morgan, and that gave us a very, like, I don't know, easy transition to the Liv and Dominic and Rhea Ripley focus of it all. I thought the catharsis was, like, really strong the moment she got her hands on Liv Morgan and was able to at least send her into the corner post. Dom, of course, like, here's the thing, like, anytime, like, one of these two gets the upper hand, you have another member there to pull the other to safety, and they played with that tension, I think, so incredibly well. They've done a great job of turning both Priest and Rhea into super hot baby faces coming out of the group. And I mean, that so much of that came from the great work of Dominic and Liv Morgan and Finn Balor, and just, you know, obviously the writing that's been attached to all of this as well. But everybody in the Judgment Day storyline has come out of this stronger as a result of Saturday. Liv, Dom, and Balor are much stronger serious heels coming out of it. Priest and Ripley are huge baby faces now. So everybody, you know, in this next chapter is in a really good position.
Bit of a lateral for Carlito, maybe.
A bit, yeah. Mm. JD moves up, I guess, a little.
How did you feel the follow-up to Rhea? Because it feels as though you had to do this turn, and I think on Saturday, the last thing the audience wanted to see was heartbroken Rhea Ripley. Mm-hmm. And it's like she was betrayed, but now we're on to the revenge version for Rhea Ripley. Like this is purely about violent revenge instead of a heartbreak or being on the verge of losing or crying over the loss of Dom, which I don't think people wanted to view this character going through.
Yeah, you want the Rhea Ripley revenge tour. Right.
Yes.
On Saturday, I wasn't so happy seeing like Rhea Ripley essentially like be manipulated and get played. I thought the character was supposed to be smarter than that. But I understand you need to get to that point in order to get pissed off Rhea Ripley revenge tour Rhea. Like she had to have been wrong. And she has to sell, you know, the suffering of a heartbreak. I wish like there was a bit more sort of like, I guess, layered thought into her finally getting cheated rather than just having it be pretty straightforward. But I mean, the moments here I thought were so effective. And again, like just satisfying, I want to say, you know, you're talking about an audience that really wants to see both Priest and Rhea get their revenge on Balor and Dominic and Liv. So all of that has been very successful.
As Damage Control is on the way to the ring, they are jumped by the Shooters and they take out Dakota Kai, injuring her knee, the one in the knee brace, and that takes her out of the match. So the Shooters come out, Deville mocks Dakota Kai, thinking there will be no match, but instead Io Sky enters with Kairi Sane, so it's Io taking on Sonya Deville, and Pat McAfee refers to Dakota Sky, which is quickly corrected by Michael Cole. Deville sends Io into the steps. We go through the commercial, and Io hits the bullet train attack, which are the double knees into the corner. Stark then saves Deville, so Sane goes after her. Sky tries to dropkick Baszler and gets caught trying for Deville's advocate, but that's blocked. Sky and Sane then both climb on top of the post and turnbuckle, and we get a simultaneous over the moonsault and insane elbow to the floor that was timed out very well. Sky then hit another over the moonsault to pin Deville in 9 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I actually thought the match was a little messy and a bit rushed in parts, and maybe just an off night. To my viewing, maybe not to yours, John. I also think Damage Control's babyface turn has been really poorly communicated. And at this point, I think we could safely say they are babyfaces. They wrestled as babyfaces here. They came out for the save in an earlier match as babyfaces. And the Shooters are heels. So I think they are supposed to be babyfaces in this feud. But I don't think they've done anything to create like much reason for the audience to cheer them beyond, I think, our supposed dislike of Sonya Deville and her team. And that's just not enough, you know? Like, we went through all these weeks of what? EO and Damage Control being embarrassed by Lyra Valkyria, and they vowed to change, and they changed into leather outfits, and that's kind of been it. Like, we haven't really sympathized with them.
You ever gone all leather?
No, I've not.
It's a big change.
I guess so. But I didn't necessarily get people cheering for me either, you know? So like this has really just been an outfit change and really not much more story, I guess, to get people to want to cheer for Damage Control. So I also don't think Shayna and the rest of the team are that strong as heels yet. So some work to be done, in my opinion, for all this.
Yeah. The match didn't stand out to me in like a solid way either. I mean, the big spot was the elbow moonsault combo, but there was like this late in the show. I mean, it was tough being in the third hour as well for this crowd that I think by this point they were ready for. The big focus was this Wyatt's match that was coming up that the whole show was built toward. We had a brief appearance of Ilya Dragunov giving some a pep talk to Sami Zayn after his loss. And Zayn says, "Thank you, Ilya. You'll make a fine champion one day." And I was just tired at this point, and I started envisioning Ilya Dragunov and Friends Do Cleveland. I mean, the Ilya Dragunov comedy show would be something else, of him just screaming.
Amazing. I'd love that.
That vein just popping off. Jey Uso walks in, says, "Sammy's got to pick himself up. You'll get your rematch with Braun." And Zayn says, "I already talked to Adam Pearce. I'm getting my rematch next week." I'm like, so what was this guy sulking about with Ilya? Did he not tell Ilya this as well?
Well, he did have like concern that this isn't going to be like the last time where he could just like fight back and win the championship back, you know? So I think he's trying to convey that he is concerned about Braun, even though like he's owed a rematch.
Jay says, well, you can win the title back, and then we've got unfinished business with Judgment Day, and you're going to become a double champion. And Sammy's like, oh, yeah, wins and losses matter now, so we could get a title shot, even though it's been multiple weeks since we beat the tag champions in a non-title match. Great, great reminder.
Pretty much, yeah. So Roman is back. He's doing his thing on SmackDown. We've got Sammy and Jay reuniting here. Like they're definitely, you know, playing a bit of a long game with what we're suspecting to be an original Bloodline reunion. So
did you see Jay got the old Brock Lesnar eat, sleep, yeet?
I did see it. Yeah. You like it? These were top sellers. I
ordered 10 weekend. Tonight. Yeah.
Did you get your yeet glasses?
No, but dude, I saw so much Jey Uso merchandise this weekend. Guy wasn't even on the card, and he was like the most popular person in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Another Wyatt video, this one on Huskus, Joe Gacy, and it's Bo Dallas voicing, they thought they could control you. They locked you away. Open your heart to the man in the woods. And again, these ones really hit with like Eric Rowan and Bo Dallas, and the others have really not been anywhere near that level. They're like, just
they're there because they have to have a video for every guy.
I guess I feel you could have added some substance to these, like just something.
But the problem is they need to be believable. And because the other two are so attached to real life, you're right. Like he's probably got some trauma in his.
Everyone's
life.
Got something. It's just just something, and you can accentuate it as well. Like these are
so,
just
so. Here, I think we're supposed to infer that keeping him locked up means what. Like not debuting him on the main roster?
Being in NXT? I don't know. Yeah. We held off on you for this main event gimmick that we had in mind.
Yeah.
Gable and the Creeds are doing a walk and talk in the back. They have a message for the Wyatts. This is his new family, and we're sending you back to the freak show of a swamp you came from, and they are American made.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I was waiting for like a remix of American Males here.
Oh, they were so close. Change one letter, we could have brought back that Jimmy Hart classic.
Oh, dude, American Males, the clap above their heads.
Well, they could bring back the other Jimmy Hart classic. They could bring back American Made as well.
Oh, yeah, matching singlets here and looking very stoic here.
Look
so
at
they
this
come out
goatee on a Brutus there.
Brutus is
I love it.
Fashionista. Yeah, Brutus Creed. Next week on the show in Austin, Texas, Bron Breakker against Sami Zayn in a 2 out of 3 falls match for the Intercontinental title, and Kairi Sane and Io Sky against Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark in a #1 contenders match. I love that these women's tag titles, we have to have an eliminator bout to determine. There's just such a backlog of challengers that may the best team win to deserve this tag title match that Lash Legend and Jakara Jackson just competed for. We'll find out. Which team of the two team challengers will earn that prestigious title shot? All right, main event, Chad Gable and the Creeds against, we've got Joe Gacy as Huskus, Dexter Lumis as Mercy the Buzzard, and I guess that leaves Eric Rowan as the Rabbit. Is that who he is?
Eric Rowan is the Rabbit. Yes, correct. Okay. Yeah.
And Bo Dallas just has a ringside seat in the chair. We have all the smoke surrounding the ring as the Wyatts charge and
So I think we should talk about this like before even the match. You know, I'm very curious to see like how they would decorate, I guess, for these matches, because of course it's been one of the most controversial elements of all of Bray Wyatt's in-ring gimmicks is the lighting, the Mountain Dew lighting.
None of that stuff. Like we had smoke, but no mirrors.
Yeah, exactly. They kept it very straightforward. You could see everything. It was typical lighting. The only sort of mystical element was dry ice, I believe, coming from the rocking chair of Bo Dallas.
Which did get a "This is awesome" chant before they even locked up. This Baltimore crowd was just amazed by this.
Well, they love the entrance. I guess they were chanting "This is awesome" and just the moment of the match. But you think they were cheering for the dry ice?
I think it was the dry ice.
Maybe. Sure.
It wasn't.
Maybe they don't have that in Baltimore. They don't have dry ice.
Do you know the last time Dexter Lumis had a match?
2023, when Odyssey Jones was drafted.
May of 2023 was the last time this guy wrestled.
Okay. Well, enough time to grow that hair long.
That was it. So the Wyatts are in control early. I was very interested to see how this match was going to flow. And it was a lot of the Wyatts on offense for the beginning and the Creeds just bumping around for them. And they go to break. They come back. And each one of American Made take turns with moonsaults on Gacy as they have the heat. And then Gacy does his handspring into a double lariat, tags Rowan. And Rowan comes in. And, man, this guy gets cheered. And he cleans house. And then after a baseball slide drop kick, he does a tribute to Brody Lee that it seemed everyone got here. And they were just so into Eric Rowan here. And I thought the guy looked really good for the brief time that he was in this. There's a twisting slam to Gable and the Creeds make the save. The crowd was so upset that they broke up the cover. And Dexter Loomis, who seems to... It's like this guy is playing a... 260-pound version of Darby Allin. He like climbs to the top and he hits this crazy seated splash to the floor. It looked like, hey guys, catch me if you can. If not, I'll just bump my ass on the floor as he comes down. Like everything he does looks really uncontrolled. And I say that in a good way because I don't think the character should be doing pristine, smooth looking moves. This guy should look like he's got like a sciatica while he is leaping off the top, and that's kind of what this looked like. As
so that's a cool name for a move, sciatica.
the sky high attica. Gacy and Loomis hit uranagis to the Creeds on the desk. Gable turns into an eliminator. Shout out to the great Ocon from Rowan. And then Gacy power bombs Loomis on top of Gable, and Loomis hits the sciatica splash off the top, pinning Gable. Interesting, Gable, the one to take the fall in 11 minutes and 3 seconds. And the post-match just sees the five of them enter the middle, do their pose with Bo yelling, "We're here," as the show goes off. I would say, based on the quick reaction I saw afterward and the audience here, I would say this got a pass. This worked for the audience that they passed this first test of doing an in-ring segment with the Wyatts.
Yeah. I thought it was a good debut match. I mean, and this was the biggest challenge of this entire group's success, in my opinion.
And they had three really great opponents for this as well.
Well, to me, the challenge was, okay, like, we know the production is going to be strong. I think they found a great way of introducing the group. They found, essentially they're doing the same Bray Wyatt entrance, except like, you know, times five. And they did a great job with that. They did a great job with the vignettes. Can this whole thing hold up in ring? And I think we are clearly seeing that this company has learned from their mistakes with Bray Wyatt's various gimmicks. They are choosing to go a very straightforward path here. These are not mythical or mystical creatures 24/7. They're disgruntled employees who are choosing to embody the costuming and the spirit of these characters because they find, I don't know, like strength, I guess, in wearing these sort of outfits. And it allows these guys to just essentially wrestle a straightforward match without these masks. They wrestled, I would say, a very like fan-friendly babyface style here, doing like interesting fan-friendly moves. Dexter Loomis being powerbombed onto people worked really well. I think Eric Rowan coming in, playing the powerhouse, doing like a big babyface clean house type of comeback was very effective. Dexter Loomis, I would say, has always kind of wrestled this style, but I think with the gimmick this over and tonally fitting, like the stuff he does with the stalking and like the crawling on his hands, all of that works a lot better under the Wyatt Six. And I would also say the same with Joe Gacy, who like, you know, he's always done like that upside down in the corner thing. I always saw it as a bit of a Bray Wyatt ripoff, but now it works really well as a tribute. So, you know, just having the gimmicks and having like the context of this has actually made what wrestlers they were actually better, in my opinion. And, you know, like they got by with having these three do the majority of the wrestling, and the match got over and it became a success by the end. And you have to credit the Creeds and Gable, who worked their asses off, not just in the lead up to this, but in the match itself, selling their asses off for the three of them. You probably couldn't have asked for a better group. They were excellent too. I don't see them just, you know, being written off from this entire feud. I see it continuing, and I see it with the Creeds and Gable. You know what? Maybe the Creeds and Gable move on to Tozawa and Otis at this point. But the job here was to make these three look amazing, and they did.
Do you see them like making it a special occasion when you do build to a match for the Wyatts? Like, do you imagine that these become like weekly occurrences of involving any of the five really in matches? I mean, it's something where I think you want to be able to bottle the enthusiasm of a Wyatt six kind of presentation as long as you can while it's novel to people, as opposed to just becoming another part of the show. and there's going to be like, I think overall, like they did this, I think everyone knew like the pitfalls of this group. And so far, I think people have been, I think, optimistic with this presentation of them, that they have been avoiding a lot of the potholes of the past that they inevitably fell into.
Yeah. I think that would be wise, you know, to keep these appearances at least like in ring pretty sparse and special. I think they first of all have to like wow people enough with their in-ring style to make it feel like a worthy attraction, and they did well. Now, is it the type of like match that I'd be like, wow, I can't wait to see the next Wyatt's match? Not necessarily yet. Like, I don't think they're that strong levels of performers. But still, it's the entrance that I think is still the main draw. And just to be able to say you saw the Wyatt's wrestle, I think that's still a big draw.
This works for TV. I thought this was a smart way to do it on TV, and let's see what this builds to on in a third hour too, which ultimately is the tougher hour to maintain audience. And you've also set aside Bo Dallas as well, as you know, building up a match to him down the road, which maybe that is something for a Chad Gable if they continue this or they go elsewhere. I have a hard time believing that they're just going to cut this off, but this was very definitive in terms of the loss and the leader taking the fall too.
This was them like not being able to hide behind great editing or like really good production. This was just going down to the wrestling, and they delivered a strong match. Now, like, Bo Dallas is going to have to do the same. Nikki Cross is going to have to deliver the same, you know, better matches that we've ever seen from them on the main roster. And the challenges will continue, but up until this point, they've done really well with this gimmick so far.
So there you go. That was Raw coming out of SummerSlam. How did you assess this show, Way, coming off of the show on Saturday and the follow-up to what was a very big storyline progressing event on Saturday and leading people to Monday?
I thought it was a good Raw. I thought they kind of satisfyingly gave you follow-up to the main story, which is, of course, the implosion of the Judgment Day. So you had a great segment, in my opinion, with Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest nearly getting their hands on the group, but Priest and Ripley finding strength in, I guess, you know, supporting each other. You had Gunther's big celebration and a big tease, I guess, a main event already for the next pay-per-view being set up with Randy Orton. You had CM Punk and Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins continue their thing. Maybe even the highlight of the show, you could say, was the Bronson Reed attack on Seth Rollins. You know,
I thought that was the best angle on the show.
Constant elevation of like new talent, I think, is always like wonderful to see, and they were very successful, I think, with Reed here, and also in continuing to heat up Drew versus Punk, and also Rollins versus Punk as well. So yeah.
Well, it's not just about our opinions; we want to hear from yours as well. As we are going to go to the super chats and the forum.
Yeah, let's go to some super chats here. We got one from Jake from the Windy City. Thank you, as always, Jake, for the support. He sends $5 to say, successful debut for the Wyatt Six tonight. Rowan was intimidating. Best he's looked in a while. Loomis looked motivated as well. I hope this goes far.
I think Eric Rowan has, I think he quietly improved quite a bit over these last number of years. I mean, he's 42 now. It's not like your career is over at 42, but I think he works well in like a multi-man setting. But I thought his hot tag was great. I really enjoyed the Brody Lee spot that was thrown in there as well. Like, he certainly held up his end in this whole thing as well.
Probably celebrating with a glass of wine.
Yes, very, very well, the vintner. Well said.
Jumanji Hunter sends $5. Thank you, Jumanji. He says, hi, John, do you think they intentionally kept you out of the press conference and we got no Thurston question?
I mean, we addressed this on Saturday. I mean, I don't like I shared what I was told that it was it came down to numbers, and that's the reason I was given. Like, I would need some kind of proof to know that.
And there is none. There's none you could have.
That's it.
It's up to them who they you know, let in, and up to them who they grant questions. And we don't exactly, we won't know the reason for it. All right. Thank you very much for that. Let's go to Tom. Or Tom O'Hagan simply sends $5 to support. Thank you very much, Tom, for that. So thank you all you guys who are watching us live, and those of you especially who sent in super chats.
Let's go to the forum. And Manny writes in, someone passed me the tissues. What a main event it was. Everything a Bray Wyatt fan such as myself could ask for. A really great episode of Raw tonight. The Bronson Reed segment was fantastic. The continuation of the Punk and Drew feud. Damian Priest feeling like a main eventer. I really hope that this kind of momentum keeps up on the SmackDown side of things.
Let's go up next to Brian in New Jersey. This was one of the better post-pay-per-view Raws I can remember seeing in years. Monstrous reactions for Priest and Ripley versus Balor's Judgment Day. Bronson Reed's procession of tsunamis to Seth Rollins. And the main event, a straightforward match with no magic or spooky lighting that the crowd loved. So I'd say the Wyatt Six are off to a good start match-wise. It's nice to see Reed occupy Rollins' time, if only until Berlin or whenever Punk and or Drew are available to fight Rollins. Nice brief showcase for Odyssey Jones, and I'm curious how that story plays out. As someone outright replacing Big E could make for some real drama between Kofi and Woods, though I see Big E tweet in approval of Jones' debut. Interesting. Okay.
Muggin is next. A strong Fallout episode that did a lot to reset the board for Berlin. Any belly aching about the brand split became a moot point when Randy Orton showed up, as it paid off what happened in Saudi Arabia. Gunther and Orton 2 is a great choice to headline Bash in Berlin. Randy wants world title number 15, and Gunther wants to erase the sole asterisk on his path to the title. Bronson Reed got made in one night, and him against Rollins should be for Berlin. Not sold on Odyssey Jones being the Wish.com version of Big E. Rhea and Damian versus Judgment Day 2.0 is off to a hot start, and the main event was a cathartic ode to Bray Wyatt. No Gacy, Loomis, and Rowan got to have a straight-up six-man tag without being hamstrung by any hokey tricks. This could actually work out, he says.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Jeremy in Texas, who says, the Judgment Day is reborn. Odyssey Jones is alive and off the milk carton after being drafted to Raw last September, and the brand split is dead for now. I guess in the case of Randy Orton and Gunther, yes, but their excuse is that it was inconclusive following King of the Ring. So I think audiences can accept that. And then you have Theory and Waller taking on R-Truth, which, yeah, is a cross-brand match. But, you know.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, cares? It's like, if you have doesn't an matter. Idea, you can throw them. I don't think it's some hard and fast rule. I think people are just accustomed to it. If there's a story that makes sense, they're going to throw guys on either show. I mean, it happens all the time.
And Jeremy says, I'm glad the brand split didn't handicap WWE from making the Orton-Gunther match. Who could they have actually gone to on Raw? Maybe Rollins, maybe a Priest rematch, but Orton-Gunther feels like a good main event for that show. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Cody for Germany. Maybe a tag match to put him on the show? Yeah, maybe. Who would have picked Bronson Reed as the heat magnet coming out of tonight's show? A big surprise and big program for the big man with Rollins. For Reed to elevate himself, does he need to get a win?
I mean, they put him over so strong here. I would hate for... I think that would be the way to go here. Like, Rollins should go into this match, like, extremely compromised from this. Like, this should be a massive injury he is selling, even if it's 4 weeks from now, whenever they're going to do this match. It's like, I didn't even realize this till we were discussing it over the weekend, that, like, since Mania, Seth has done the one match, which was Money in the Bank, and that's it.
Oh, he's probably, even though he was a backup, I guess, for Punk, he probably... Yeah, yeah. I guess maybe he's still...
And from an angle perspective, like, he should not be wrestling until this Bronson match, which you would think is the pay-per-view, if not like and it should be weeks away. Like, he should not be wrestling anytime soon to sell this.
And like you mentioned, because of the injury, I think Rollins can afford the loss. He can come back and beat Reed for it, but I think it's really important to establish Reed right now by giving him a big win.
And it gives you a reason, like, you've dangled Rollins and Punk, and you know it's this match everyone wants to get to, but now there's another thing that are keeping them apart, and you could get a pay-per-view or two out of Reed and Rollins.
Yeah.
Last one is Ani, who writes in a great episode of Raw. Lots of interesting new directions. I thought between a good in-ring promo and an excellent backstage promo, this was the best I've ever seen Damian Priest on the mic. Rhea also felt like an enormous babyface. Thought Punk came across as a very likable one and loved the Seth freaking Reed angle. I hope this means Punk and Drew can resolve their feud while Punk and Rollins is on the back burner, even though they've dovetailed both with great storyline justification. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have certainly done a great job of introducing these matches that they've dangled in front of you, pulled them back, but are hopeful in keeping the desire for it and paying it off, which I think this audience has more of a faith in things being paid off for down the road than from a generation prior, where things could just be totally forgotten and never referenced again.
Agreed. What was the last time we had a bad blood pay-per-view? 2004. Okay. And okay, so there's no longer a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, but every single edition of Bad Blood has featured a Hell in a Cell, including the first one, which featured the debut of Hell in a Cell. So I don't think they're just naming it Bad Blood.
It's also the anniversary of the very first Hell in a Cell as well.
Right. Yeah. So we just did SummerSlam 1997. Somebody made this joke on Saturday.
they're just running through 97.
Who are they getting to replicate Bad Blood 1997?
Oh, God. And then Survivor Series is in Canada.
Well, no Canadians in that feud, at least.
That we're aware of.
But I am expecting a Hell in a Cell match for Bad Blood after the Berlin pay-per-view. What feud do you think could be could take up that spot?
Punk and Drew makes a lot of sense if you're going to hold it off that long. That's the one that jumps out now.
Priest and Balor, perhaps by that point.
Priest Liv and Balor. Rhea and Liv, I was going to say. I mean, it's very possible you get two matches on there that they would do, a men's and women's as well. So, I mean, you're certainly simmering the programs that would make the logical sense. Like, that was always the thing that Levesque had stated was, instead of being in this trap where, well, it's October, we have to do Hell in a Cell, it was the program justifies the Hell in a Cell. Which is funny because they kind of do have that now with War Games every year, is that like that is now the time of the year for War Games. However, this year you also like you can work backwards. You know this is coming, so you can you don't have to be a slave to this. Oh, well, it's this month. It's like, in a prior regime, it was like, okay, well, we have a pay-per-view in 4 weeks. Well, now you know 6 months, you know a year out when your pay-per-view calendar is and you can work backwards. And I think everyone knows that. War Games, they'll have something very big to pay off at that pay-per-view.
Yeah, I don't think like the stipulation was ever really the stipulation pay-per-views were never really the problem. It's the fact that they didn't do the work to get to the match. Seems like they are now. And I would say the same for Bad Blood if Hell in a Cell is the expectation, because you have a number of feuds that are heading towards rematch territory that could really benefit from that gimmick.
All right, there you go, everybody. A big edition of Raw following a big edition of SummerSlam. And heads up that Tuesday night, Brayden and Davey are coming your way with Up Next. And then on Wednesday, Waiting and Kate from Montreal will have a G1 Climax for you up at postwrestlingcafe.com. Jump on board, get all of the remaining G1 podcasts, and you can go back and listen to the first time all of our previous shows that are up there. And then again, Thursday will be Pollock and Thurston, and plenty more. All shows can be seen on the schedule at postwrestling.com. That's going to wrap it up for us. Thank you for your super chats. Thank you for your feedback, and we will speak with you many more times this week.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.